at North Dakota State University in Fargo, and it's the 8th of November, 1993, and I'm in the home of Joe Dillman here in Mandan, North Dakota. It's a real pleasure, Joe, to speak with you, especially because you have such vivid memories of life in the German colony in the Ukraine, and then leaving Ukraine and coming to Germany and so forth. And first of all, I'd like to tell me, what was the date of your birth?
My date of birth is July 3rd, 1926.
And you were born where, Joe?
In Schenfeld. It was called Glos. It's about 11 kilometers from Nikolaev. Glos to the River Bug. It's about only 5 kilometers River Bug. And the rayon, those days they call rayon, which just means the county, was Landau.
So you were, how far were you from Landau?
About 27 kilometers.
Was this colony primarily German villagers?
Our village was, at one time, before the revolution, was German all the way. But after the revolution, there was a lot of Ukrainian people moved in. Ukrainian people moved in the village. So I would say there was about three-quarter Germans, one-quarter Ukrainians.
And were they mostly Catholic?
Our village was primarily all Catholics. Germans were all Catholics.
So you were 17 before you left this village?
Yes, a little bit before, yeah.
What was the name of your father and mother?
My father named Joseph Dillman also.
Joseph, and when was he born?
My father was born in 1897.
And your mother, what was her name?
Mother was Katharina Hummel, and she was born in 1888.
And they were born in this village too?
My mother was born in Schenfeld, and my dad was born in Katharinenstall, Katharinenstall, they call it.
How do you spell Schenfeld, the village?
S-C-H-O, the two dots, O-E, and F-E-I-E-L, Field, Schenfeld.
When you grew up, Joe, in your home, how many children were there?
One sister, I only have one sister.
One, and what was her name?
Isabella.
Isabella. Now, did you grow up speaking only German?
Yes, we grew up only speak German. But as you know, in this 1937, Stalin had some fear in the Russian deal. There was some government problem. And he closed all the German schools. Have you heard it already? And we had all goals that Russian, we were in the school, we had three languages, German, Ukrainian, and Russian. And most of the German students in those days, they couldn't understand, couldn't follow. My sister went 3 years in the fourth grade, and she could not get the Russian language and Ukrainian. Mm-hmm. After that, they kicked them out, and they had to go to work in the collective farm. Well, I could handle it pretty good. I was there for 1 year, and I graduated from the seventh grade, what they call the middle school.
So you were, when you started to take the Russian language in school and it was all in Russian, you were about 11 years old?
Well, I was in about 37 or something like that, you know.
30. Now you were about 11 years old, and then, but in the home you still spoke all German.
Mm-hmm.
Did your folks ever learn to speak Russian?
Oh, yes. My dad was supervisor, was there. What do you call him, a foreman, supervisor. And he was in the Russian army, in the Tsar army. He was drafted there and he spoke real good. He had, okay, coming back, track back a little bit. My dad came from a big family. And his dad died very young. And there was 9 children in the family. So the three middle ones, they put in what they call in a Catholic school in Karlsruhe. So the girls both become nuns and dads both become a priest. So I had a very good education in the school. But he got drafted and he got in the Russian army. And when the revolution, the war was all over, he came back home. Then he came back. He couldn't go back to his own little town where he lived, Katharinenstall. So he came to Schenfeld and he was hiding. That's where he met my mother, and then they got married there. It's a long story.
Why couldn't he come back to the former?
In those years when he came back, it had parted southern part of Russia. has changed too much. One day what they call the communists were there, the next day the Germans, that those days were the Germans, Austrian combined, they were there. And then the white used to call the Tsar. You call them the white and the red, and the Tsar people came in there. So all those different military try to get those young people, try to get them, they talk with them, try to make the work for them, try to serve them. Mm-hmm. So that's when he went in hiding. He was hiding and he was dressed as a woman. Hmm. And he worked for my grandparents' mother's side. He worked for them, milking the cows. And my mother, which he met later on, noticed that there was something wrong with him, that he's not a woman. Mm-hmm. So that's what he met. But then he got away. He didn't get... finally it all settled, you know, the thing settled in 1923. You know, everything got settled in the part of Russia, 22, 23. Stalin and Lenin finally got a grip on the whole matter. So they finally settled, you know. The Polish, there was, it used to be every week or two somebody else moved in the village, you know, the red or the whites or the Germans or the Hungarians. They didn't know what's what. And they finally got all settled in the 1923, 22, 23, they got settled. And they got married. He stayed in Shenpol and didn't go back to his...
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Those years, you were born in 1926 until 1944, so there were 17 years of your life in this German village. How was life there? Was it a good life or was it pretty tough?
Okay. Life, as far as I can remember back, in the 30s was real, they were called like in the United States, the 30s were real rough. Real. In my family, like I said, we only have a sister. My dad had, like I say, he was a supervisor, foreman. We had no hunger or bad for clothing. He took good care of us, no question about it. But there was family with large families with children, it was bad. A lot of them died. Malaria came around and all the people, my mother, she came from a little well-to-do family. She had some of their gold crosses and rings and everything, take it all into the Nikolaev and the Toroksin. Toroksin means like a pawn shop, you know. Mm-hmm. Not the pawn shop, you get flour and food, sugar, flour, whatever, you know, for the eat. She got all the gold, the golden cross, the wedding ring, everything in there, you know, to keep us. But it was bad in our village. I remember back, a lot of those children couldn't come to school in the winter time. They didn't have no shoes, no clothes. But it started getting better than after 1934, what I remember back in the 1933, 1934, it got better than it, you know, the crop came and people got a little better.
Did you have some chores you had to do at home?
No. See, in the time of, coming back, in the time of the move and the communists, we only had one cow, and I didn't do much of a chore because there wasn't much there. The cow, my sister, she was older, and she took care of my mother, you know. I loved school. I didn't do much chore at all. I loved school, loved to go to school, and I never missed any day in school. But most of the children had to do the chore at home. But then when the Germans occupied us in 1941, the Germans came in, and what it was, the people wanted to divide everything, the land. But each household got so much land, because it was collective farming up to that, and nobody had anything else, so they got horses, and it was divided. They tried to divide those plows and whatever you call the meat to make the farm. But people worked on their own land, so each one got 20 hectare on his own in our village. But they got together anyway and worked it collective because neither one had anything. Mm-hmm. So they had to work everything collective together. And they did pretty good, the crops were good. And that's when I had to help in chore. We had three horses, two cows, pigs and chickens and everything else. Had a pretty good life, and then the Russian front came closer in 1944, So we had to pack everything in a wagon and then our horses and left March the 4th. We left there and it was spring. And a lot of those people loaded too much in the wagon. The horses were, you know, there was no roads and you just have to go across the field. They got stuck and that was a mess. And the Russian Air Force was above us. The front at one point got very close. We could hear the shooting, but we got away. We got into Bessarabia, crossed the Dniester, got into Bessarabia. Then we took a rest for a while. The Germans were with us. The German troops and German guards were with us and guided us, you know, in through Bessarabia, then into Romania. The Romanians didn't want us to go through there, but I guess the Germans negotiated, and we went all along the Danube River, the valley of Danube River, you know, to get up Budapest. And we got to Budapest on May the 3rd, 1944. We were 62 or 61 days on the road. And then they put us on train in Budapest, and we left our horses and the wagons all there, and they settled us in the part of Poland, what they call Watyka. That's where we settled again.
You heard what about year that? Was this then, Joe?
44.
Uh-huh.
May 44. And we got there, they gave us a home. They brought us there, and they gave us a home on a small lake. And the home was empty, and we got in there. And I snooped around, went down to the lake, and there was a little cottage. And there was two people, older people in there. The man was handicapped. He was making baskets and chairs out of those, what do you call this thing? He made baskets, you know, he was in the wheelchair. That's what their place, this was their home. So I told my family, my dad went down and he could speak, we both spoke, I spoke Russian, I could understand pretty good Polish. My dad went down and they told him that was our home. And said, well, sorry, but the Germans put us in here, and here we are. I said, that's fine. Well, I didn't have too much, I was there for, but well, it was end of May, June, I think I was there for 40 days or 45 days, something like that. I remember they got drafted in the German army and I left.
And you were 17 then?
17, became 18 in the army in July the 3rd.
July 3rd, 1944.
Yeah, I celebrated my 18th birthday in the basic, in the boot camp.
So you went off with the army then in 44, and where did you go to?
Okay, we went to Prague, Czechoslovakia those days. We was there for 3 weeks. From there to go to Olmütz, and they were boot training. From there the ship was to Italy. We left for Italy in October 1944, end of September. And we're there in Italy till Christmas time in 44. We celebrated Christmas in Italy, and then from there we got orders to get out of Italy and get on the East Front. We left and we got into Nizhny, which is on the border between Austria and Yugoslavia. And we recouped there. We were there for 2 weeks for get everything ready. We're supposed to, we did, attacked, fell out on March the 3rd, the Germans pushed, tried to recover some of the territory, but there was no more food, there was no ammunition, there was no more gasoline. It was a disaster. We had to go back, followed back into Austria. And our unit was in there, we surrendered. Because we, the Titos, which was the Yugoslavia at the time, they wanted the guys in prison, but we wouldn't go in prison to them. We went to the prison to British, to the English, in Spital, Italy. So they put us in trucks and took us down to Italy in the prison camp. In the beginning, the prison camp was tough. They didn't treat you bad, but it was very, very little food. As time the war ended with Japan and the British got more supply from the United States, the food got better and they put us in working battalions. And I, like I said, I was with the British Air Force from January 1946 till I got discharged. I worked with the British. We cleaned up all the airports with the British from the south part of Italy to Rome, the vendors, the Udine, we cleaned up all the airports, you know, mm-hmm. for the British. Mm-hmm. And then I got discharged from the German.
You were in, like, a prisoner of war for how long then?
Well, from May the 8th, that's when we surrendered, in 1944, until September 1947.
Then when you were discharged, what happened?
Like I said, I went to Germany, the farmer, my cousin sponsored me there.
How did you find your cousin?
Through some correspondence, you know. When you're in a prison, can be try all kinds of deal, try to get correspondence wherever you can. Through a friend, and he was there, and he found my cousin, and the cousin sent me a Zuzuggenehmigung, what it means, the authorization to move into that little village. And I got discharged to that. And from there, I went to Hamburg, Germany. Like I said, I found a job up there, worked up there, and wrote this Mrs. Kress here in North Dakota for some clothes. And
how did you find Mrs. Kress?
Through some lady, another cousin of my mother in Germany. She knew her address, and she gave me that address from over here. I wrote to her.
And what was her full name, the lady here in Mandan?
Mrs. Matilda Kress. Matilda Kress, her husband was Mike. And they sent me a package with some clothes, which was, everything was too big, and two dish towels was sewed in, there was two bars of soap, two pairs of socks, and that was it. Well, as a friend of mine, he made this for a sporting outfit, for some, made all smaller, and made me a jacket and a pair of pants, and made the dish towels, and made me a shirt. He also made me a little bow tie from the leftover. And they wrote me a letter and they said if I would come to the United States, they would sponsor me. Well, I thanked them very much for their clothes, for the package, and I said, well, okay. And that started in 48 in January, and it took till March 52, they were left for the United States.
So what did you do in the meantime for those 4 years then?
I went from there, I worked in the factory, and I went to school over there with, again, to learn the German language more, better, and the trade, or work as a, what are calling like a cabinet maker, it's not a cabinet, it's a woodwork, you know, woodwork in the shop. Mm-hmm. But also we had to, with the machine, you know, your lathe machine and all the different machines, you know, the saws and everything. And I had 1 year left to go to get my journeyman's license. I said, well, I'll go to the United States and see what's what. But the meantime, what really, I found my father then in 48 in the fall, I found my dad. He was blind from the war. He was drafted in the army also. He was blind from the war and he was in a blind institution in Berlin. I found him through some correspondence from people, you know, to write. I found him there and I went over to visit him. And he encouraged me to go to the United States because he said the Russians, you're going to capture us, you know, going to be not too good because we're going to go to Siberia. And we knew that by that time my mother and my sister was taken back to Siberia from Poland. And he encouraged me. But as time went on in 52, when time came for me to go, he went over to visit him and he said, well, things have changed and maybe it's best to just stay here. I would like to have somebody here. Well, I promised him, I'm going to go to the United States, and if I don't like it over there, I'll come back. But when I got over here, and things weren't too rosy, like, you know, North Dakota in 52, mm-hmm. and he wanted me to come back, and I promised I will come back, but before I could get money saved up to go back, he died in 54. Mm-hmm. He passed away. So I made my mind, well, I might just stay. When I come over here and I work for a grocery store on a farm, then I work in a grocery store, then I start the plumbing apprenticeship. I start the plumbing apprenticeship in 1953. And I started as a plumber in 52, but I made an apprenticeship in January 1953. I made my plumber's license in 1957. I served my 5-year apprenticeship. And got a job in Northern Minnesota then, and I got married in 57 with my wife. And
your wife's name?
Florence Haag, from Florence Haag, H-A-A-G, Haag.
And where did she grow up?
She grew up, she was around Strasbourg down there. She is, some farm to move twice, one farm to the other. And she went to school in Strasbourg to the sister school, and then later on they moved to Haag, and they lived in Haag.
And how many children did you raise, Joe?
We have four children. We have three boys and a girl. David, the oldest one, is a civil engineer in Dallas, Texas, works for Peter Kiewitz, he's with the fiber optic. Tom, I talked this morning to the airport, he's with the Army, he's with the reserve, he's an Army man, you know. He's left for San Diego. Dolores is a girl, she's a lawyer, works for the Justice Department, Washington, D.C., has been there now since 87. And Donald is the youngest, he got married this year in Richmond, Virginia. He's a CPA, works for Media General. He's accounting controller, whatever we call it.
Now let's go back to those warriors, because when you left and joined the Army when you were 18, and then you mentioned your father joined then too.
Well, yes, my father took him, and October 1944, as the war came closer to Poland, all the eligible men in age had to serve, you know, they had to go in. And he had to go in there also. And he got hurt in East Prussia there. They took him up there and he got hurt up there. He got through a bomb blast, you know, from the air, heavy bomb covered him up completely. And they dug him out, and through this blast, he lost his vision, you know, his eyes flipped.
Now, what, your sister's name was?
Isabel.
Isabel, and your mother?
Katrina.
And where were they during this time?
During this time, they were, okay, come back to my mother and my sister. They stayed in Poland until the fall of 1945. Well, the Polish people didn't want those German Russians, the Germans there, so the Russians put them on trains and took them back to Russia, and they took them out to Siberia, to Omsk. And from there, when Khrushchev finally came into power, they stayed there, I think, for 8 years. Yeah. Khrushchev came into power, and then they opened up things that they can move around a little bit, that they get out of there. They were out in the forest, and all they did work and wood and lived together in barracks, and all, you know, the life was terrible, sisters. But when Khrushchev came in and opened that they could move, so they moved out of there and moved down to Altaisky Krai, because there was some of them in our village, some people lived there, so they got a little more, you know, from home, people from home. And they got better. Sister said it got better. My mother passed away then in November the 13th, 1963. She passed away from there. And she's buried out there. So my sister left from there again. She found an uncle from my dad's brother, in Alma-Ata.
What was his name?
Johann Dillmann.
Johann Dillmann.
Right. And she went down to Alma-Ata, and there she married a man, was a widow man. He had three children. His wife passed away, and she married him. And she raised all the children. And they lived there. They were in 89. In 89, the whole family and the whole, everybody came out to Germany. She's in Germany right now, lives in Germany.
So she just came back to Germany too then, in the last
89,
years, huh?
Right. She came to
Did Germany. You have correspondence through all these years? With your sister?
Yes, we had, like I said, I found them, what we did, I found them then, not I did, the Red Cross did a great job in Germany. They found my mother, my sister, in 54, my dad passed away in August the 9th, and I got the letter in October, that I still got the letter someplace, the Red Cross said that this should be my mother, my sister, you know, but I should write to them and identify real, you know, if they are not, which I did, and it was my mother and sister. So over the years that we helped them as much, but not so much till as long as Stalin lived, we couldn't do nothing, you know. But when, like I said, Khrushchev came in, we could help them. We sent a lot of packages and clothes and money over there to help them along. As time went on, it got better there too, you know. Things got much better. But there was a lot of down there that Altaiske Kreis, Shalom Malovodnaya with the village Malovodnaya, they lived. There was a lot of German Russians there, a lot of them. Half of them had, again, they have to have, from out of Russia, you have to have a sponsor again, you know, to get into Germany. If you didn't have a sponsor, it was pretty hard to get out. But they had sponsors, so they came out. But they left a lot of cousins and a lot of relatives behind there.
So today you still have a lot of relatives then in Kazakhstan?
A lot of.
Primarily in Kazakhstan?
Kazakhstan. And my mother's brother, like, is when they coming back to those years in the 20s when they was occupied, a village shame felt from the Russian Reds, the Russian Whites, and the Germans. The Germans came in, took my mother's brother, he was talking with him, the Germans. And he got into Germany, he came back home in 1926. They let him go back home, discharged him to, when he was all settled, he got back home. But a communist, they didn't trust him, he was taken away right from the start. I guess in 1927 or 28, they took him away out of Siberia already, to Novosibirsk. His name was Franz Hummel. But one thing later on, through those years in Russia, they got to find each other, and he found my mother, and they got to visit each other. And she found out that another brother she had, Alphonse, he was dead, and she found out, you know, some of the things. So my mother's side, Uncle Frank, what we call, all his family is still over there in Novosibirsk. They're all out there.
The Dilman family.
The Hummel, from the Hummel, from the mother's side.
From the mother's side, Hummel.
From the Dilman side, there are a lot of them over there too, yet. A lot of them, cousins, you know.
Joe, today, are you still having correspondence then with anybody in Russia?
No. No, I had correspondence. My sister has correspondence in Germany. She writes me now and tells me that cousin so-and-so, cousin Leo, and all, you know, cousin from Uncle John, Uncle Nicodemus, and Uncle Nicholas, you know, those cousins, a lot of older. She gets more letters over there than I do, you know.
Right.
So I don't write over there anymore.
Uh-huh.
But she does. She writes to me and says that so-and-so has come out and so-and-so is still over there.
When she writes to them, in Russia or in Kazakhstan, does she write to them in German or in Russian?
Russian.
She writes to them in Russian?
Yes. And she, now she improves, you know, with the years, you know, we used to write, you know, she, like I said, she had 4 years in back home in German language school, 4 years, and then when they switched us over into Russian, and she couldn't grab the Russian language, you know, she went for 3 years in the same grade, and then she finally got out of it and went to work. And now she writes better Russian, speaks better Russian. When she came out from Russia, was over and visited in 89, she could speak better Russian than German, but now she's over there in Germany. They put them to school, the Germans put all those people when they come out for 6 months schooling. Everybody had to go to school. Mm-hmm. And the German now is pretty good.
Where does she live in Germany?
In Moers.
That's located where?
By north of, and the rural gebiet, and that's by Duisburg, Düsseldorf, and that's Moers, which are listed.
Yes, what we'll have to do is make contact with your sister, because on June 18th, 1994, in Stuttgart, they're going to have the large Bundestreffen.
Mm-hmm.
That's
by
the Landwirtschaft.
She knows already. She knows it.
And I'm going to speak there at that event.
Oh, you will?
Yes. In
June 94?
June of 94, yes. We're going to take a delegation from North Dakota.
We're planning to go over there about when I, sometime next year.
Maybe you can join us for this, because we're going to have, there's about 12 people that are going to go.
Hmm.
And we're going to be at this Bundestreffen, and we're going to have a big building.
Yes. Do the interest German Russians have to...
When we're finished with our conversation, we should talk about that, because it's new information for me, you're telling me, but on August 7th of 1993, just this past summer,
mm-hmm.
I was in Hanover at the Landestreffen for Niedersachsen,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and there were 10,000 people there.
Oh, yes.
And it was quite interesting. And they, mm-hmm. what was so interesting for me was when we were finished with the conversation, I had to give a talk, but they preferred I give my talk in German rather than English. And I can speak pretty good German.
Well, that's...
But I speak Schwäbisch, you know. The old dialect.
Old dialect German, yeah.
Right, and of course the people understood me much better, they said,
than
the political people speaking. Because they speak High German and I spoke the Lower German, and of course those older people understood that. But many people didn't understand any German because they don't understand German, a huge number of those. But it was very interesting, but I think that we need to visit about that because I'm also interested in the Dillman name because we have received letters at the university looking for Dillmans. And I wouldn't doubt that they've read in Neues Leben, you know, the newspaper
mm-hmm.
from Moscow,
mm-hmm.
that we can help them here in America. And I wouldn't doubt it could be some of those relatives that don't know how to make contact and they've written to us. And also, by chance, when Bishop Wirth was here, did you have a chance to see him?
No, I maybe we were someplace, no. I seen him, we were going somewhere. And
But you know, he lives in Novosibirsk.
Novosibirsk, correct.
And Father Al Bitz from Fargo, who was at St. Mary's Cathedral in Fargo, has resigned, but he's planning to go over for the dedication of the cathedral in Novosibirsk,
mm-hmm.
which will be on August 7th of 94. But we have to make contact. I have to tell him to come and see you because that would be wonderful if he's in Novosibirsk.
There should be some Hummels, you know, no Dillman. There should be a Hummel, like that from that was a brother to my mother, you know, Hummel.
Right.
There should be some cousins there. You had, I don't know how many children had. Well, there should be some.
And maybe when we're over there, I'll have a chance that you could interview your sister. But what we could do is, if it would work out next summer, we want to do a number of interviews. Maybe we can interview your sister when you're there.
Well, sister, you know, she has problem with the back and the knees through all the years in the Siberia. You know, she had a leg operation knee. I don't know if I'm going to write to and talk and see if you can make it. We talked about it, that if I come over, I'm going to take her down there. But I cannot say if she's going
to
make it.
We'll have to wait and see.
Time.
Let's go back to the village life in the Ukraine. Do you recall, like going to school, did you sing songs in German or do a lot of stuff in German, like play games in German?
Okay. See, here we go again. You know, until a change came in 1937, you know, we had German school there. We had German school up to the time of it. The time we had German, we had the Russian as a foreign language. But Stalin changed this whole system then, and we all had to start in Ukrainian, Russian, and German. In the fifth grade, our foreign language was German. We also had to, the battle you had with Ukrainian and Russian, because you lived in Ukraine, the Russian language was the intellectual language for the Russian. So they bothered you had the three languages. And that's when a lot of the German students couldn't follow.
They had difficulty.
Difficulty with that, with the languages. But we, like I said, my sister went to 4 years in German grade school, you know, 4 years. And then, like I said, you couldn't get the Russian in the head and you could make it.
Was there a church in your in the
village? Yes, we had a beautiful church in Schoenfeld.
What was the name of the church? Do you remember?
My sister asked me, no, I forgot already.
Forgot the name of the church. But they had a parish priest.
They had a, but I don't remember the parish priest. By the time I get up, you know, to go, I remember to go to church, you know, and the parish priest used to come from Hauptstadt. There was a village I had, maybe a two. I remember it used to come and I got baptized and everything at the time, but I don't remember
too much about that.
Nope.
Uh-huh. Did you go to visit some of the other villagers?
Yes.
Other villages nearby? What were those villages that you'd go to visit?
Well, I used to travel. I used to visit, I mean, all. I used to use the Sultz, Karlsruhe and London. I was in the, not no secret, I mean, my sister was, and we were pioneer, you know, the Russian youth organization, communistic organization, sometime years ago for summer camps up to London. And I loved Nikolaev, the city, and Steinberg was on the German village on the Bug River, and the Speyer, and Karlsruhe, and Katrinthal, and Moloch, and down to the other part, which all around state, all surround here.
What was this youth camp? What was that all about?
Youth camp, when you were a youth, and the German and the Russian, the youth, Stalin wanted the young people more than anything, and he wanted to train you, and you had all privileges, you know. If you were a good student in school, which I was summer, and the summer month you can go to a camp, you know, called Pioneer Camp, you know, and the camp was pretty good. But the old scene was number one in the camp. They said, you know, there was not such a thing as a god, you know, and there, you know, there was no religion. Religion was dope. The Russian, the communists tell to us the religion is dope, you know, people get doped up, and that's, you know. But when you come home to your parents tell there is a god and things, that you were a little confused.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't know what was right and what was wrong, you know, but with years you're going to make your own judgment and you'll find out what's, mm-hmm. Yeah. But the camps were real, I really liked them. Mm-hmm. It was 2 years of camps. I really enjoyed them. It was not some of those psychological, you know, things that try to put in your head, you know, to bother me a bit.
A lot of sports there and so forth?
Sports, yes. We played soccer. We played all kinds of other games. We had turkey, you know, different kind of games. You
what
know.
Was that?
That's a game, you know, you put it down, you know, you make a wooden deal, you know, that's numbers on this, you know, square, you know, it's four numbers. And then you lay down and hit it, you know, the deal. It's just like a ball game, but we had no ball. It's a tsurka, called tsurka.
How do you spell that?
I wouldn't even know how to spell
is
it.
Is that yet. A Russian word?
Tsurka is Russian, yeah.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
And that we played those kind of games, and I always sing, and...
What, is there a lot of singing right now?
Oh yes, in the camps there were a lot of singing.
What did you like?
All Russian songs.
All Russian songs?
Mm-hmm. Russian, Ukrainian.
What do you remember most about German, Russian, or Ukrainian songs? What do you remember most?
Oh, I remember so many of them.
Russian ones too?
Mm-hmm.
Really? Can you remember one now?
Yeah, you better do.
Can you sing one?
No, let's see. Shiraka strana moya rodnaya. Enough.
You've got a good voice. What about a Ukrainian song?
Ukrainian song?
What was it really a top?
Ukrainian the difference is... Oh, no, thank you. Good morning again. Oh. Just can't get quick.
What about German? Did you sing a lot of German songs?
Oh, yes, we sing a lot of German songs. Yeah.
A lot of German songs.
A lot of. Uh-huh. German songs at home.
Was there much, like, were you able to celebrate holidays? Like, was Christmas celebrated?
All those years, even in the Russian, you know, Russian time, in the communist time, you know, we always celebrate Easter, Christmas, all those. And the folks used to get together for Names Day, you know, and I didn't know what, then they finally told us that there were saints, you know, saints there, like St. Joseph, St. John, all this, the birthday was celebrated, but the Names Days were celebrated. But they did it in a quiet, you know, not just the folks got together with the neighbors and they celebrated, but we know it was Easter, we know when it was Pfingsten, it was Pentecost, we knew when there was Easter time, and then the Russians finally came, I think now the years, they came out with the New Year's celebration with a Christmas tree. It was for the first of the New Year's Day. They call it Yolka. Christmas tree was decorated, you know, we had to go around and sing Russian songs, you know, Christmas mm-hmm. tree. But that was, they couldn't take it away from the German, Russian, those holidays, they couldn't, they were, no matter what, they saw.
Was there a little fear, that it was real quiet?
Yes, there was always, my mother was, because my mother came from a little well-to-do family, what do you call them, Kulaki, maybe you heard the name already, Kulaki means, Kulak means a fist, and all that interpreted as ruling the people who had possession at land, and then there was called Kulaki. Kulaki, my mother was a Kulak. They were well-to-do. Like I say, all her brothers, you know, they were put to Siberia. And she was many, many times picked up by the NKVD. Maybe you heard of the name for NKVD those then.
What was that? Say that in slower.
NKVD, Nationalny Komitet, Внутренних дел. Nationalny Komitet, Внутренних дел. That means National Committee for the Inner System. There was like a police, like the German had the Gestapo, and we had the, maybe this CIA, whatever it is, or FBI. So they used to come and question many, many times.
Do you remember that when they would come?
Yeah, they used to come at night, and we had to close the windows, and you know, all close the windows up, put the light on, and they used to search. I don't know what they were searching for. They used to find some old Bibles, German Bibles, and all those. They used to take them along, and as far as you got them back again. And the one thing my mother had, the Holy Father, I don't know which one it was, in a picture of it, Pope, and they took it along. We never got it back. It took that along, you know. They searched the house for everything from correspondence. She had some German letter from Germany, which I never got to talk to anymore, my mother, you know, and I don't know who they were from Germany. But I think it was for a brother. He was in Germany at the time, and it was the Germans took him along. I think that's what.
At that time, when you were growing up, you had no correspondence from America.
No, not at all.
No contact from America
not
at that time yet.
Nope. We had my dad, like I said, he was in Karlsruhe in that Catholic orphanage school over the call, and he had two sisters. Sister Philomena and Monica. They were supposed to be nuns, but when the communists changed it all, they were very educated, good educated. They went to Moscow and they worked for a German consul in Moscow. And I think through that, they had correspondence. And my mother and my dad had some correspondence with those. The German consul used to take them to Germany and took them back to Moscow. And we don't know later on when the war broke out, what happened to them, we don't know whatever happened. Maybe the German consul took them back to Germany or whatever happened, we don't know. They worked for the German consul. I remember one time they came back home in the 36 or 37 those years, you know. We looked up to them because they spoke real high German, well dressed, you know. They came home and they went back to get the mosque and worked for them.
Mm-hmm. When you were in those village years, the kinds of foods you ate, was it primarily German or did you have Russian food too?
Oh, we had Russian food too, yes, we had Russian
mixture,
food.
Mixture, huh? Mm-hmm. What were some of the things they ate?
Well, borscht soup is a Russian dish. Kasha is a Russian dish.
Kasha. Kasha?
Kasha.
Kasha. Kasha.
It's like made from barley, and it's whatever it would come close with here when you just like a cereal, you know, just a real small deal that was boiled and put some cream over the top, you know, mm-hmm. and butter, kasha, mamalike, have you heard of mamalike? That's a corn flour, you know, that was made together. That's more came from the Bessarabian, from the Romanian people. They eat a lot of corn bread, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And pirushki, maybe you heard about the name pirushki.
Sureshi
pirushki. Pirushki is a dough, and they fill it with different kind of fill it with liver, or sauerkraut, cabbage, or regular hamburger meat. They call them pirushki.
Mm-hmm.
They were real good, and I loved them. And then the German, they had German dishes there. But a lot of those dishes, what the German Russians brought over, borscht soup is a Russian dish, Ukrainian Russian.
Mm-hmm.
Pirushki is Russian. And those cheese buttons, what they call, you know, Käsknip, they are mostly Russian dishes, but the German people, in Germany, when you go to Germany now, you don't find no Käsknip, no Dampfnudel, you can find Klese. Klese is about a mixed potato and dough, and it's Klese. But those are all Russian dishes. The Russian people like dough. The Germans like potatoes.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Your mother was a pretty good cook?
Yes.
Did a lot of cooking?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. A lot of canning too?
Yes, you can. She made the fruit, she dried fruit, and she put cherries in the bottles, you know. I don't know what else, you know.
What do you remember how the house was built?
How house was built?
In the village.
In the village, most of the homes we had in the village, you know, were stone. The stone walls were pretty thick. They were warm during the time, cool the summer, they were, you know. And our roof was with straw. The roof was made from pressed together with rice straw and a long straw, and put it, you know, was pretty nice. And there was the straw was a four stoop, and a hinder stoop, what they call them, four living room and a back living room, then an entryway in the kitchen. It was a typical German Russian.
In the bedrooms?
Well, we slept in the same room, in the bedroom, you know. In the summer times, we kids slept in the hinder stoop, and the other, the Daniel, the sister and I, mother and dad slept in the front, and it's winter time to save, we all slept in one room.
All in one room. What about the barn? Was the barn separate or attached?
The barn always was attached to the house, and then later on, when the Germans came in, we had another, built another one that was attached to the house, you know. It was all along.
Was there a wall or anything around it? A fence around the house?
They had, no. At the front, the German villages in our town, not where we lived, wasn't it? They mostly had out of stone built a fence, you know, on the streets, both sides. You know, the streets were very wide, and they were all white, you know, they had, you know, your gate to go in. It was made out of stone and painted white. But wood was hard to get, even metal. Anything was a fence, but it was made out of stone and made a little gate to get in there. But that was, the streets were very wide, you know, and then that was...
What did they use for heat?
Heat, we used most of the manure, what was from your cow, from your horses, you know, that was kept and spring came, they mixed.